Could Bitcoin be worth $1 million over the next 5 years? Well, to answer that question, you need to understand what is Bitcoin and what do you need to understand, or what is the driving factor behind Fortune 500 companies like Tesla and other companies like Square and MicroStrategy adopting this new cryptocurrency. It is my belief that every decade or so, a new opportunity arises for individuals to be able to build generational wealth. We saw that during the phase with the rise of the internet. Several multi-trillion dollar companies were spawned because of the internet. And what we're seeing happen is Bitcoin being adopted as a hedge against the debasement of fiat currency. So friends, if you want to know if Bitcoin could potentially be worth $500,000 or even $1 million per coin over the next 5, possibly 10 years, then you want to tune in and listen to this podcast episode. This is a replay of an Instagram Live that I held to break down and explain Bitcoin. As always, what I'm going to be sharing is for informational and educational purposes only. In no way should the information be considered personal financial advice. If you find this topic of Bitcoin cryptocurrency fascinating, and if you're serious about wanting to build generational wealth or to accelerate your ability to build generational wealth, I invite you this Sunday, February 28th, I'll be hosting a Building Generational Wealth with Bitcoin workshop. And I'd love to have you as a guest. Like I said, every decade or so, a new instrument ushers in the next wave of multimillionaires, which then creates generational wealth. I want to make sure that everyone gets a shot at this crypto opportunity. I'll leave you with this. There's a company that's about to list on the stock market. That company is Coinbase. Do you think the US would allow a company to set up its business around Bitcoin and cryptocurrency? And would that company be worth over $100 billion with a B? I'll let you think about that.
Welcome to the Investing Tutor Podcast, the show for professionals looking to master the most up-to-date strategies needed to build wealth and provide a stable financial future. Here's your host, Dr. Hans Boateng.
First and foremost, let me give you some context in terms of just the background of Bitcoin so that you know what it is. I see Stephanie is here as well. And Carrie, oh, you are welcome. So the creator of Bitcoin, no one really knows who this individual is, but he goes by the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto. Now, this gentleman, his goal, was to create, in essence, a digital currency that allowed two people to be able to transact with each other without having a trusted third party in the middle to broker or manage that transaction. So if we look at the way that the financial system is set up right now. If you wanted to purchase something from Amazon, or if you wanted to purchase something from Etsy or Shopify, right? Your bank is the trusted intermediary. So what does that mean? You deposit money in your bank, and when you go to buy something, your bank is in essence being the one that is communicating with Amazon or Shopify or whatever company that you're purchasing from. And your bank is communicating to that retailer or that individual that, hey, you know, Hans has the money in his bank account, right? Or Michelle has the money in her bank account, or Stephanie has the money in her bank account, or Carrie has the money in her bank account. And because of that, the transaction goes through. That's how transactions work in the real world. Well, Satoshi came up with this idea that now that we have the internet, what if there was a way to securely allow two people to transact? And we're not going to have any bank kind of be an intermediate or a third party between those two transactions. Instead, we're going to have computer protocols and code be the factor or be the proof of that transaction. So now, when you have in quotes this digital code or digital proof of a transaction, one person cannot say, oh, I sent this money, and another person is saying, well, you didn't send this money. Everything is documented. It cannot be changed, right? So that in essence, in its simplest nature, is the goal of Bitcoin. It's meant to be a peer-to-peer network that documents every single transaction. And it has pretty much digital proof for you to be able to go and verify. So because of that, it allows or it enables individuals to be able to transact with each other. In essence, even from a global standpoint. So right now, let's say I'm here in the US and I wanted to, you know, let's take an extreme case. Let's say that I wanted to send $20,000, right, to Ghana abroad. As you know, there's a limitation as to how much money you can transact, you know, internationally. I once heard this joke. If you wanted to take, let's even scale the amount down to $10,000. If you wanted to send $10,000 abroad, right, it would be much faster for you to have the $10,000, put it in a briefcase, go board a plane, and fly overseas. The money will get there faster with you doing this manually than trying to transact using our current banking system. And the reason is because they might want to hold the money in escrow for 2 days. The bank might want to verify, what are you sending this money for? When the money gets to the recipient, they might want to hold on to the money for 2 days. They might want to confirm, are you really sending this money? Are you sure this money is not a fraudulent transaction? So probably it might take about a week for you to be able to send $10,000 overseas. If an individual was leveraging a payment network like Bitcoin, it would literally take less than 15 minutes to be able to transact that amount. I remember reading last week that $1 billion was sent via the Bitcoin network in less than 1 hour. And the total cost for sending $1 billion from one party to another party was $17 on the Bitcoin network. I want you to think about that for a moment. If you can transact, like send $1 billion in minutes, how does that transform global digital transactions? Right? So right now you all understand that Bitcoin is a global payment network. Another thing that I wanted to point out, I took some notes here. I want to make sure that I don't forget anything that I wanted to discuss with you all. Another thing that I wanted to point out is recent news came out and Jay-Z and Jack Dorsey. Jack Dorsey is the founder of Twitter. He's also the CEO of Square, which Square, by the way, owns Cash App. And they want to, and I see you all have questions. What I want you to do is if you have questions, right, go ahead and just hit the question mark right below this live and go ahead and type your question in there. Because if you leave the questions in the comments and other people keep commenting, it's going to keep, you know, scrolling up. So hit the question mark, type your question in there, and I'll get to each and every one of your questions. So Jack Dorsey and Jay-Z, they partnered up, and their goal is to help introduce Bitcoin to Africa and India, right? So they contributed about $24 million into a fund, and I believe they purchased about 500 Bitcoins, and they are making it as accessible to, you know, Africa and India to sort of incentivize them to understand that a Bitcoin is the new digital currency of the internet. So I know that most of you remember Mark Zuckerberg wanting to launch his own cryptocurrency. And he was looking to launch what was called Libra coin, if you all remember. And Mark's goal was to, you know, create this coin that could be used globally. In essence, he wanted to create something kind of like Bitcoin. The only difference is that instead of it being a decentralized coin, which we will talk about shortly, right? Bitcoin is decentralized. This Libra coin, or this coin, you know, being launched by Facebook would be centralized, meaning that it would be owned in essence, or it would be have been created by, you know, Facebook. Now, it didn't work out because at that time, Facebook had a lot of trust issues. You know, what had happened with the 2016 election kind of threw a little bit of a shade, you know, on Facebook. So Congress was not hearing that. They weren't going to allow Facebook to then go on to own a global digital currency. So now I want you to think about that for a second. You and I know that Mark Zuckerberg is incredibly smart, right? I mean, he built one of the largest companies in the world at such a young age. What would encourage this smart and intelligent individual to want to venture into the cryptocurrency space? I want you to think about that closely. Clearly, there is an opportunity for any cryptocurrency that gains what? Global dominance. So far, the only currency that seems to be doing this is Bitcoin. So what are some of the characteristics or some of the unique features of Bitcoin? The first is that it is, I want you to think of Bitcoin pretty much as a payment network, right? It allows for peer-to-peer transactions. It is decentralized. What this means is that no one individual owns or can disrupt, right, the Bitcoin network. It is managed by any individual who is willing to pretty much, you know, put up bandwidth or use their computer to kind of mine or keep the Bitcoin network up, right? So in essence, there isn't one individual or one country or one city that runs Bitcoin. It is completely decentralized. So that's one of the unique features of Bitcoin. Another incredible feature of Bitcoin is that it is transparent. So in essence, everyone is able to see what is happening on the Bitcoin network. You know, for each block that's mined, you're able to see exactly what's going on. For transactions that are happening, each and every transaction is documented on the blockchain. So because of that, it's completely transparent. Obviously, with the examples that I've offered to you all, you know also that transactions are quick in terms of its execution, right? So those are some of the more general features of Bitcoin. Now, I wanted to move forward to talk about some other characteristics of Bitcoin. So right now, there can only be 21 million Bitcoins in existence. With the way that Bitcoin was coded or programmed, only 21 million Bitcoins can ever be in existence. I believe the goal is that by 2190, okay, so I'm saying this, you know, off of my memory, but by 2190, right, so the year 2190, the last Bitcoin would have been mined by that time. So like what, like, you know, almost like 180 years from now or something like that, or 179 years, something like that from now is when the last Bitcoin would be mined, would have been mined. So 21 million Bitcoins is the maximum amount of Bitcoins that can be in existence. So far, 18.5 million Bitcoins have been mined. So far, there are 18.5 million Bitcoins in circulation, meaning that the next, century or so, only about 2.5 million additional Bitcoins would be added to their circulation. I want you to think about that for a second. With this fixed supply of coins, it is part of the reason why you are seeing sort of like the value of Bitcoin continue to increase. Because as you have an asset with a fixed supply, right? So there's only a limited amount of coins that you can have in existence, 21 million. So as you have an asset with a fixed supply, 21 million of them, right? The more individuals that adopt, or the more individuals that utilize, right? Or the more countries that jump on board, or the companies that choose to accept, in essence, you know, Bitcoin as a form of payment. All of these, different scenarios give more credibility to Bitcoin. That's why Tesla putting Bitcoin on its balance sheet was a big deal, because Tesla is, as you know, close to a $1 trillion company. Elon Musk is the richest individual in the world, right? So then as we see kind of like this shift towards embracing a Bitcoin as, you know, digital currency, it increases the adoption. Right now, the estimate is that roughly about 150 million people transact or use or hold some form of Bitcoin. Okay, so about 150 million people. Think about that for a second. Globally, how many people are out there? There's this interesting stat They said that there are 49 or let's say 47 million millionaires in the world. Okay? So there are 47 million millionaires in the world. If all 47 millionaires wanted to buy one Bitcoin, they all wouldn't be able to get one. Because what? There's only a fixed supply of 21 million Bitcoin. Currently, there are what? 18.5 million in circulation. So then what happens is you have to look at economics, supply and demand. You have a fixed asset and an increasing demand. As demand continues to increase, meaning more people want it. And people in the Bitcoin ecosystem would say, well, we're holding on to our Bitcoin. It is estimated that 60 to 70% of Bitcoins on, you know, different digital wallets are just being held as a store of value. So then as individuals are holding and not letting go of their Bitcoin, and as demand globally continues to increase, you see a surge in the price. And that's what you're seeing right now with the increasing Bitcoin prices. So I wanted to also touch on some fascinating points. Yes, it's good that I took notes so that I don't forget anything. Bitcoin has been the best performing asset in the world for the past 10 years. So what do I mean by this? Obviously, I'm the investing tutor. I love, love, love the stock market, right? But Bitcoin, on average, has been returning 200% per year in terms of returns, 200% per year for the past 10 years. I want you to think about that for a second. Even in 2020, Bitcoin returned well above 200% in terms of returns. Each year for the past 10 years, Bitcoin has been returning on average 200%. That's well above, you know, the stock market, right? That's well above real estate. That's well above any bonds, you know, any asset class out there. So with that in mind, I'm going to share one more interesting fact about Bitcoin, and then I'm going to dive into how can we look at the value of Bitcoin, okay? So here's an interesting fact. In 2010, when Bitcoin was created, Bitcoin was roughly, less than 10 cents per coin, okay? It was less than 10 cents. I know if you're hearing this right now, you're probably surprised, shocked, and angry, right? One Bitcoin was about 10 cents. Yeah. Take that in for a moment. And if you're wondering how much is one coin right now, it's roughly about $49,000. So let's just say $50,000. So in 2010, if you had $1, okay, your $1 could have gotten you 10 Bitcoins, okay? So $1 would have gotten you 10 Bitcoins. So let's see over a 10-year period, right? What would $1 be worth today? Well, $1 invested in Bitcoin in 2010 would be worth $500,000 today. Whew, that is quite eye-opening, isn't it? $1 invested in Bitcoin, giving you 10 coins, would be worth $500,000 today. So, with that fact, Let's look at today. Each individual Bitcoin is worth roughly about $50,000. Does it mean you need $50,000 to buy, Bitcoin? No, you can buy smaller quantities of Bitcoin. You can buy $1 worth of Bitcoin or $10 worth of Bitcoin or $100 of Bitcoin or $1,000, right? You don't need $50,000 to be able to get access to Bitcoin. So let's at least set that straight. Now, let's shift and look at how do we value Bitcoin. Now, I have a few valuation metrics that I want us to look at. Okay, perfect. So let's first look at Bitcoin as let's take the global payments network. Remember that Satoshi wanted Bitcoin to be a digital payment network, right? So then let's look at the global payment network, right? How much in terms of transactions are moving globally in terms of from a payment network, whether you're looking at Visa, MasterCard, you know, bank to bank transactions, how much money is moving globally? The estimate is that about $200 to $300 trillion, you know, move globally through payment systems. Okay, $200 trillion to $300 trillion move globally. So let me ask you this question. So this is where I, you know, want you to begin thinking for yourself, right? So that it makes you have some level of confidence if you are going to be valuing Bitcoin by yourself, right? So we know that $200 trillion to $300 trillion move globally through these payment gateways or these payment systems. Well, what percentage of that money can Bitcoin capture, right? So let's say that it's $200 trillion that's moving, you know, through these systems. If Bitcoin is able to capture a 10% of that value, that means that Bitcoin should be worth $20 trillion, okay? Now, to have you understand what that means, right now, at a $50,000 per coin value, Bitcoin is valued at $1 trillion, okay? So if Bitcoin was taking place or replacing 10% of the global payment network, Bitcoin would be worth $20 trillion. Okay, so going from $1 trillion to $20 trillion. So meaning that the current value right now, $50,000, you'd have to multiply that by 20. Okay, so $50,000 by 20 to get what the future value would be if Bitcoin was disrupting 10% of, you know, global payment network value. Okay, let's look at another value of Bitcoin. What if we're looking at Bitcoin relative to gold, right? It is estimated that the value or the total value of gold in existence is roughly about $8 to $10 trillion. Now, let's just say that gold is about 10 trillion so that it makes our numbers super simple. Okay, so 10 trillion is the value of gold. Now, gold is an old school way to store value. People held on to gold because they believed that, you know, gold is scarce. Like, you know, you don't have a lot of gold around. You can use gold to make jewelry and whatever beliefs that they, in quote, had, you know, in back in the day. Now, what if we have a better store of value and something that isn't heavy, something that you can just move from one country to another country literally in minutes, right? I mean, if you wanted to send, I was about to say $1 billion worth of gold, because we saw the 1 billion being transacted on the Bitcoin network, how would a person move 1 billion worth of gold from one country to another? It would be so expensive, right? So it's not even practical. So then all of a sudden you begin to see that the use case of Bitcoin is way more valuable than even gold, right? So then if gold is worth $10 trillion in its current state, and Bitcoin is a much better version of gold, well, let's assume that Bitcoin, you know, becomes as valuable as gold, probably even better, especially if it can do a better job, right, than gold. Well, if Bitcoin is currently $50,000 per coin, and that $50,000 is equating to a $1 trillion value of Bitcoin, for Bitcoin to eclipse gold as the reserve current, as the, you know, as in quote digital gold, then Bitcoin has to move from 50,000 to 500,000. And the reason is because going from 1 trillion to 10 trillion means that you're going to be multiplying that number by a value of 10. Okay. So then what that means is that $50,000 per Bitcoin becomes $500,000 per Bitcoin. So if a person was valuing Bitcoin as a digital currency that can become more valuable than gold, then the person has a relative value of Bitcoin in their mind, right? Now, the very last way that I want you to look at it is this. Right now, if we look at assets in the US stock market, right? If we look at how much money is placed in stocks, it's placed in bonds, it's placed in money markets, right? And this is a general estimate. It is believed that about $170 trillion worth of assets are in the, you know, US financial markets, right? So about $170 trillion. Let's move that number to 200 trillion so that it makes the math simple for us to think about it. Once again, okay, if we have a $200 trillion market and we ask ourselves what percentage of that market is fair for Bitcoin to disrupt, meaning that this 200 trillion, how much of that money is going to be moved into Bitcoin? Remember, millennials are more embracing of digital technology. Over the next decade, between 2020 to 2030, the average age in the US population, according to the Federal Reserve, is roughly about 35 years old. Okay, so for the next 10 years, the dominant demographic is going to be millennials. Okay, so then what percentage of, you know, assets is going to be shifted into a digital currency like, you know, a Bitcoin? So with $200 trillion, roughly as an estimate, and if we're shifting or moving 10% of that into Bitcoin, then we have a $20 trillion valuation. If we're moving 20% of that into Bitcoin, then we have what? A $40 trillion valuation. So the summary of what I'm trying to share with you all is this. Bitcoin is an asset that demands your attention, okay? Bitcoin absolutely demands your attention. It is one of the few opportunities where an individual stands the chance, right, to be able to build generational wealth by adopting or embracing something which appears to be obvious, but many people are going to be distracted. Maybe perhaps they hear Bitcoin is 50,000, or Bitcoin is 75,000, or Bitcoin has fallen to 30,000, and they are just going to be distracted. What I want you to focus on instead is, What is the future potential of this digital currency? And are you going to have some form of exposure to the currency? Does that make sense? And the truth is, you don't need to have, you know, a large percentage of your money or your assets in the currency. In the past, most individuals used to say, have 1% of your assets in Bitcoin or digital currency. Right now, I see that the consensus is roughly around 5%, right? So having about 5% of a person's assets, you know, in some kind of like a Bitcoin, you know, for example, right, would be the smart thing to do. But I want to caveat it by saying one thing also. Right now, being that we see numerous institutions like the PayPals, the Squares, the Teslas, you know, BNY Bank, the oldest bank, Mass Mutual, one of the oldest insurance companies, putting Bitcoin on its balance books, balance sheets, we see a widespread adoption. So the belief that Bitcoin can go to zero is not as strong, but I still want to be quite transparent. Oh, MicroStrategy, Chris, that's a very good point. MicroStrategy also placed a Bitcoin on its balance sheet. Now, one thing that I wanted to stress is this. Bitcoin, like I explained at the beginning, its value is based on what? The demand of the coin and the adoption of the coin. If we woke up one day and everyone, you know, didn't want to hold on to Bitcoin, or everyone didn't want to use Bitcoin, essentially we can see Bitcoin, you know, losing its full value, right? Because if no one wants to hold it, no one wants to transact with it, no one wants to use it, then we could see Bitcoin completely lose all of its value. My question for you is, with what you're seeing and hearing, is that likely, right? I don't believe it's likely, but I love being transparent, right? For me, having about, you know, a 5%, I'm going to probably even estimate that at this point, probably about 7 to 10% of my personal assets, well, not only me, you know, Tiff and I, are allocated to, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum, right? These digital currencies. And I'm comfortable having a 10% allocation because I've done my due diligence, I've done my research, right? But for someone who perhaps is starting, maybe that person might want to have a 1% allocation. They might want to have a 5% allocation, right? But currently, I'm going to estimate off the top of my head that about 10% of our assets are allocated to Bitcoin and Ethereum, as well as other decentralized finance coins, which I'll be talking about those in my Bitcoin workshop that I'll be hosting end of February. I believe it's February 28th, but I'll talk about that towards the end of our discussion today. So I'm going to end with this. What are some of the factors that are driving the adoption of Bitcoin? Okay, what are some of the factors that are driving the adoption of Bitcoin? So first and foremost, we have a lot of quantitative easing. So what do I mean by that? Because of COVID or the coronavirus, the Federal Reserve have had to pump a ton of money into the US economy. Okay. It is believed that in 2020, close to 20% of, you know, the dollars in circulation, you know, were created. Okay. An additional 20% more dollars were printed or created in 2020. Okay. Once again, remember how we talked about Bitcoin having a fixed supply, right? And when you have a fixed supply, which is 21 million coins, where currently it's 18.5, but you get the general concept. When you have a fixed supply and then you have increasing demand, it increases the price. Well, I want you to think about the same thing with the US dollar or the US currency. When you have an unlimited supply, right? Meaning like there's a ton of it in circulation, a lot of it in circulation. Well, what ends up happening? The value, right? The demand or the value reduces because there's just a lot of it out there, right? So then this quantitative easing or the printing of money, which happened in 2020, and not only in the US, but across the world, right, is causing, in quotes, fiat currencies to lose a tremendous amount of their value, which further makes Bitcoin, you know, way more valuable. Okay, so keep that in mind. Next is fiscal policy, right? So we famously heard, Dave Ramsey make his comments about the fact that, he doesn't believe in stimulus checks, right? And that would be a whole different conversation. But fiscal policy, what it did was also it put a lot of dollars in circulation. Now, that money is essential. It's very important and needed. Right. But once again, it's adding to essentially more supply of dollars in the economy. So because of that, individuals need to be strategic. When you notice that there's amount of supply of dollars in circulation, it is not smart and it is not intelligent to hold too much money in a savings account. OK. Sure, you still need to have an emergency fund, right? 6 months or 12 months worth of expenses. But any other, money that you have, any excess of that should be put to work. So it should be placed in what? The stock market, in real estate, in crypto, whatever assets that you believe in, even a business, right? But just leaving a ton of money sitting in a savings account in an inflationary environment where there's a ton of dollars being dumped into the system, it's just not what you want to be doing, okay? So in essence, when you have central banks printing money, when you have the federal government giving out money, when you have also this transition to what's the word that I'm looking for? When you have just this transition to more innovative approaches to do things, right? So for example, right now the internet is here to stay. Now my question for you is, do we have a dominant payment system that can be used globally? Do we have one? The answer is no. So then, if Bitcoin is becoming that main dominant global currency, right? What value would you place on that currency? Once again, it's a currency that has a fixed supply. More Bitcoin cannot be created, okay? And from this point, clearly we see that the likely scenario is that demand is going to increase while supply stays constant, okay? When you see such a dynamic, what kind of value do you place on it? So I'm going to leave you to think about that, and I'm going to, share with you a workshop that I'll be doing, and I believe it's February 28th. It's the last Sunday of February. I'm going to be hosting a Build Generational Wealth with Bitcoin workshop. And in that workshop, I'm even going to dive in further. I will touch on Bitcoin and some of the points that I've shared today, you will hear them again, but I'm also going to dive into Ethereum, okay? And then I'm going to share about certain DeFi coins and projects that I'm looking into. So DeFi is decentralized finance. The belief that
cryptocurrency can be used to disrupt Wall Street. It can disrupt lending. It can disrupt borrowing. It can disrupt, you know, apps like Robinhood if they don't transition to a cryptocurrency, to a blockchain type model. It's so interesting how decentralized finance or DeFi is looking to be a disruptor there. So in that Build Generational Wealth with Bitcoin workshop on February 28th, I believe that's the last last Sunday of the month, I'll be hosting the workshop. The link to access this workshop is in my Instagram bio. You can click my bio and get your seat in that workshop. I'm looking to share how, and from the numbers that you've seen, this truly is an opportunity for individuals to be able to build a tremendous wealth, right? Because think about it. If an individual, let's say all they had to invest was $1,000, okay? And Bitcoin displaces gold and becomes a $10 trillion valuation. That means that $1,000 would be worth $10,000. Well, what if Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin is worth $20 trillion? Well, then the value of that is what? $20,000. So the $1,000 is now worth $20,000 over the next, let's say, 5 years. And once again, this is just more general estimates. Well, what if Bitcoin is able to capture 20% of that $200 trillion market value of assets in the US? Well, then Bitcoin's market cap is more like $40 trillion. So that $1,000 would be worth what? $40,000. So you begin to see how just a small amount of money can, you know, be entirely a wealth building in so many ways, right? In the same way, a $10,000 investment, right? If Bitcoin displaces gold and becomes worth $10 trillion, well, $10,000 would be worth $100,000, okay? And the same way, the $10,000 could be worth $200,000, or the $10,000 could be worth $400,000. So when I titled this program Building Generational Wealth with Bitcoin and Other Cryptocurrencies, it really is true. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I'll say one thing and then I'll answer a few questions over the next 10 minutes. The individuals that are in the crypto space, whether you're looking at Bitcoin or you're looking at Ethereum, are some of the smartest people on earth. Okay, I'll just be just honest. Some of the smartest, most intelligent people on earth are working on platforms like Ethereum. They are working on Bitcoin. They are working on something called the Lightning Network to make transactions even faster. Like, imagine moving hundreds of billions of dollars from one country to another in seconds, okay? That's what they are working on right now. I'm telling you guys, some of the most brilliant, most intelligent people on earth are all hyper-focused on Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other projects. So this is one of the greatest opportunities in a lifetime. But it doesn't mean that a person is going to commit all of their, you know, lifelong savings into something like this. No, that's why I said 1%, 5%, 10%, if you're super optimistic. And with this money that you are allocating into the space, you should be, and this is me being transparent, you should be 100% comfortable with potentially losing it as a worst case scenario. It's highly unlikely, but a person should be 100% comfortable with that so that you're able to gauge your risk tolerance and how much money you want to allocate into this new asset class. And it is your way of saying, hey, I'm putting this money into this asset class with the hope that, you know, it unlocks or it helps or enables me to be able to build generational wealth, right? So yeah, with that, I'm going to look at the questions that you all have. I see you have about 24 questions. Hopefully I have time to answer them all. Let's go ahead. Okay. So the first question is, how was the fixed supply of coins created or determined? So it was coded into kind of like, let's just call it the Bitcoin infrastructure, if I can use that, right? So it's like a computer code, right? You can't change it because once again, no one person can control Bitcoin. So that is literally the code. The code states that only 21 million Bitcoins can ever be in existence. No one controls Bitcoin. It is completely decentralized. So yes, that's fixed. So let's move on to the next question. How do I pay someone or get paid by someone in Bitcoin? So if that person has an online shop, let's say via Shopify, and Shopify allows an individual to pay in Bitcoin, right? Or if a person has a PayPal, and PayPal is currently allowing merchants to pay in Bitcoin, that's the way that that transaction would happen, okay? What about Dogecoin? Dogecoin was kind of meant to be a joke. So then I just want you all to know that. Okay. Will this be saved? Absolutely it will. What makes this a sound investment? If there is no regulation, it's based on a speculative feature. A very, very good question. So it's not really speculative if you look at it. The point of speculation was more in 2010 when it was created, or 2011 when it was, you know, like gaining some notoriety, right? Or from 2016 to 2017, we saw that swift speculative frenzy, and it drove the price to, you know, close to 20,000 before it fell off because people were just looking to make a quick buck, right? Now, with kind of, you know, these key players that you're seeing coming into this space were well above speculation. And in essence, Bitcoin does have some form of regulation, right? The commodities, I forget the name of the governmental agency, but they've designated Bitcoin and Ethereum as commodities in the US, okay? So we're a little past speculation. How does the coin get valued? Like I said, it's based on what? Demand. At the end of the day, you have a fixed supply of an asset, and you have unlimited demand in terms of the number of people who, you know, are across the globe, if you will. And that's what kind of values Bitcoin. Considering Bitcoin being so expensive, how about Litecoin? Bitcoin is not expensive, right? So one of the big mistakes people make or do is they look at the price of an asset and then they jump to conclusions, right? The price doesn't matter. What matters is the growth potential of that asset. Does that make sense? So don't tell me Bitcoin is expensive. It's not expensive relative to its future potential. How does it get regulated and taxed when sold? So then it's listed as a commodity. So then right now with commodities, when you sell them, generally there's like an income tax that's taken, and all of that is routed through the broker that you're going to use. So whether it's Robinhood, Cash App, Coinbase, right? Gemini, any of those brokers will be able to kind of track the taxes and all of that. Can I put more of my investments in Bitcoin, and should we expect a big consolidation anytime soon? So the truth is that an individual can make the decision of putting more or less of their money in Bitcoin. Would there be a consolidation? No one knows when a pullback is going to happen, right? For me, for example, I have in my mind that I'm probably just going to hold on to my Bitcoin until it gets to 500,000, right? This is my price estimate. So if Bitcoin does ever get to 500,000, I have a general kind of timeline of 5 years. as the general timeline to get to 500,000 per coin. Once it gets to 500,000 per coin, I'm going to analyze and then make a decision at that point, right? A part of me feels like once it gets to 500,000, I might take half of that money and just convert it into, you know, some like a favorite stock of mine, right? And just leave that that quarter million in like a stock, right? And just leave the remaining 250 in Bitcoin. That's a strategy I'm thinking about. But just like with everything, if I am, you know, making decisions at that point, I'll pretty much make it obvious. I'll make it public, you know, for clients, things of that nature, because most of my clients know I'm very transparent with things that I'm doing in the market and things of that nature. So that is my personal game plan. From now, from 50K to 500,000, I'm not touching the Bitcoin. Once it hits 500,000, I'm going to liquidate half of that money and then put, you know, about $250,000 into the market, into a favorite stock or something of that nature, and leave the remaining 250 to grow. How are Bitcoin holders protected against fraud? So if you hold, you know, Bitcoin at one of the popular, let's say Coinbase or, you know, Cash App or even Robinhood, right? Then what you're doing is you are not taking on the risk of, in quote, protecting your own Bitcoin. So there's less of that fraud and, you know, keys being missing and things of that nature. That's why I tend to like that instead of trying to custody or hold on to Bitcoin. So should I buy Bitcoin in ETF? It's approved in Canada now and will debut soon on TIO Exchange. That's a very good question. So in the US, we don't have a Bitcoin ETF, but this week, or if I should say last week, Friday, it was approved in an ETF format for Canada. So individuals can look at that also as a viable option. You are running out of time because I'm supposed to be on Clubhouse, but let's see. What's the best platform to buy Bitcoin? So you have Cash App, there's Robinhood, there is Coinbase, you have Gemini, right? So those are some incredible options to consider. How could Bitcoin be a widely used currency when it is a limited currency? How do we use it? So it being limited doesn't mean that it can't be used, globally. The fact that it is digital is what enables or allows it to be used globally. Let's see, I see a couple of questions on Dogecoin, which I'm gonna skip those. What is your opinion on buying Bitcoin via Robinhood? So, you know, hardcore crypto people don't seem to like the idea of buying Bitcoin on like, you know, an exchange like Robinhood. And the reason why they feel this way is because with Robinhood, if you wanted to get your Bitcoin, you cannot take the Bitcoin off of the Robinhood network. You have to sell it into dollars, right? And then take the dollars off. So hardcore crypto people, they want to know that they can hold on to their Bitcoin, right? And that's for you to decide. If you want to hold on to your Bitcoin, then consider Cash App, you know, Coinbase or Gemini. But if you're someone who doesn't mind or care, which partly I honestly don't care either ways. So I have some Bitcoin on Robinhood. I have some Bitcoin on Cash App. I have some Bitcoin on Coinbase. I don't care. Like, it's all the same to me, right? So then you can decide where you want to kind of hold and or store your Bitcoin, and you will have to run literally in like a minute or so. Let me see. Is there a limit to buy in? What amount makes a coin? Well, current amount is roughly about 50K. There's no limits to buy in. I mean, Tesla bought like $1 billion of Bitcoin. Bitcoin will actually be a physical coin or is digital? It's completely digital. That's why it's better than gold. What is the best platform to buy crypto? I don't believe in penny stocks, so don't be buying penny stocks. And I already spoke about the platform. So you all, it's 9:01. I have to transition to Clubhouse. And so I hope you enjoyed this. If you have any other questions, comment below this video when it hits my page. Be sure to check out, remember, the Building Generational Wealth with Bitcoin workshop. The link is in my bio. We will continue this discussion there. I know it's going to be incredible, so that I provide you the tools and strategies to be able to build generational wealth. So I want to thank you all so much. I hope this was valuable. I hope it expanded your mindset in terms of how you're looking at, you know, Bitcoin, digital currencies, and cryptocurrencies. So yeah, you all, thank you so much. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Claire, Chris, Connie. Oh, thank you. So yeah. Oh, Katina, great seeing you guys. Okay, I'm not going to be late for Clubhouse. So much love to you all, and thank you for showing up.